Welcome, welcome, welcome into a quarantine edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast, where I am joined by Locked On Nets host Marcus Barahal to rank the futures of every team in the NBA. We get into that next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox foul from behind.
What he does is contagious.
Oh, Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives. Oh,
becomes infectious.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Shaw. About to be joined by Locked On Nets, Marcus Barahal. This was recorded initially a week ago, last Friday, March the 6th, and we ranked the futures of all 30 teams in the NBA. So this existed in a different world where we weren't quite as worried about the coronavirus and the pandemic that's sweeping the nation. I think we make a joke about it even in the first 30 seconds or so. It was a little irresponsible in retrospect, but it was pretty funny at the time. And so we rank the futures of every team in the NBA. Again, this is in the context of the season not having been canceled yet, so we will not be mentioning that. But it's a three-part series. I think we're going to go 30 to about basically the whole bottom half of the league, so 30 through 16 on this first episode. I'll see how I end up editing it, and then we'll release the top 16 over two more parts, either probably early next week. I'll say maybe we'll drop one on Sunday. Let you know how it goes. Anyways, I won't delay any longer. Without further ado, me and Marcus Barahal talking about the future of the NBA.
As promised of Locked On Nets and my high school fame, Marcus Barahal, joining the podcast, still corona-free as far as we know, and that means we get to rank the futures of every team in the NBA, Marcus.
Yeah, luckily we're doing this podcast separate from each other physically, so there's no threat to either of us, and hopefully that continues.
We're both in our own bubbles, not just politically, but literally. We are doing this from respective bubbles in our homes. To further explain the concept of the pod, because I got into it yesterday, I got into it a little bit in the intro, but essentially what this ranking is every team in the NBA and basically how much you would want their future. That means their owner, their history, their front office infrastructure, their coach, their roster, their future assets, irregardless of city. So the way I explained it to Marcus, basically, if you can own a team and that whole infrastructure and that whole history would just move to the city of your choosing, which one would you pick? So without further ado, we'll get into it. The first five teams we're going to kind of speed through because I went over them yesterday a little bit, mostly in regards to how they relate to the Knicks. But Marcus, let me know if you have any significant quibbles. We start off with number 30 in Detroit. The way I explained it yesterday is I just, outside of Christian Wood, who I believe is a free agent this summer and so could potentially not be on the team following this year. He might be restricted. I should double check that. But I don't really like anyone on the roster, and there's just not a single guy that stands out to me as sort of an essential piece to a team's future.
Yeah, I mean, Josh would want me to mention Sekou Doumbouya here. He's got some promise. I agree that they're definitely, like, to the bottom. I don't know that I'd have them exactly 30th, but, yeah, they're not great.
All right, Charlotte.
Shout out to Dwayne Casey, though, also.
Yeah, good coach. Not great coach.
Yeah,
bad against LeBron. Charlotte, sort of a similar situation where I sort of like some of their young pieces, like P.J. Washington clearly looks like he's going to be a solid rotation player. Devontae Graham is very, very good this season, or at least for most of it. Terry Rozier has a nice contract, and by that I mean he's making a lot of money for himself. But I just, again, I don't think there's a single guy on this team that'll ever make an all-star team.
Yeah, you got Miles Bridges too. Like, I agree with your assessment. There's not really anyone who pops. I mean, they've got a couple solid guys, but they don't have, like, Memphis has John Morant, New Orleans has Zion. Like, they don't have anyone even close to that level. So it's tough to have a lot of faith in them. I mean, they're really their only chance is to like win the lottery, basically.
Right. Yeah, and it's a sad state of affairs in Charlotte. Cleveland, I almost moved them up because Colin Sexton scored more than 40 points the other night. And, like, honestly, like, I think I was debating back and forth, like, the next three teams that I have behind the Knicks, and, like, if I watched them every night and was I maybe irrationally confident in their young guys, would I still have all of them behind the Knicks? And, I mean, it's hard to be unbiased on that. But my thing with Cleveland is I don't think – I don't think the pieces fit as cleanly as some of the Knicks pieces do going forward. And then the other two teams ahead of them, I'll spoil it, the Magic and the Bulls. I just don't think they have the same variety of talent. And all of their young guys, I mean, this is kind of a gross generalization because I probably haven't watched enough of them, but they're not really defensively oriented. And I don't see any kind of sustainability in a Colin Sexton, Darius Garland backcourt, particularly on the defensive end. All their bigs are on the older end. Someone like Kevin Porter Jr. is pretty interesting and I think is probably going to end up being a good player, but I just don't see any coherency in terms of their future assets.
Yeah, Cleveland might be last for me just because okay. It took them like winning multiple lotteries to get to that one championship. Like they obviously struck gold with LeBron and they had to get Kyrie, they had to get Wiggins, they had to get and trade Anthony Bennett. Like, just the sheer amount of luck that took to give them really just like a 4-year window where they were in the finals is insane. There's no way that's going to like happen again. I do agree that like they've got some guys with promise like Sexton, like Kevin Porter, who you mentioned, even like Darius Garland, if you want to like still hold out hope for him. And they've got guys who they in theory could trade in Love and Drummond, but I just don't really see it.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, the point I made was, look, you can sort of consider Kevin Love a free agent, but when literally the second greatest player of all time was there, and like maybe like one of the more, maybe the most respected guy in the NBA in LeBron at that point, like they still couldn't get a free agent to go to Cleveland. Gordon Hayward allegedly was going to go there at one point before Utah matched his contract, but it just, unless there's something really good there, I don't see any way they attract a lot of talent. So I'd be concerned if I was a Cavs fan, and I would not want that infrastructure. The next three teams, I'm just going to throw these at you in a lump because I have a feeling your rankings will be different than mine. My logic for having the Magic last in this group was in terms of on the ball creativity, I just don't see a lot. Evan Fournier is a guy who I don't think is going to be there past this season. Markel Fultz, credit to him. He's been a lot better this year. It's pretty clear he's, at least in my opinion, he's never going to live up to that number one billing. And I think he probably tops out as a good but not great point guard. There's a world where that's not true. He's still really, I think he's only about 21. So there's a world where that's not true. But I also think the way they built their roster is misguided. To me, the most fascinating future for that team is if you have someone like Jonathan Isaac playing center and Aaron Gordon playing power forward and you surround those two with shooters, then I think you have the basis of something really interesting, especially defensively. And Isaac is kind of comparable to Mitchell Robinson to me as a weapon, especially if he develops a three-point shot down the line. But I just think the way they build is wrong. And they switch GMs and they actually have the Bucks old GM now, but who got Giannis and got Chris Middleton, but I don't see the right types of moves being made outside of acquiring Fultz on the cheap, which I thought was smart. The Bulls, I sort of acknowledge my bias in having the Knicks over the Bulls. Like, I think the Bulls objectively have more talent. I hate that Jim Boylan is the coach, and I'm also worried about constructing a roster around Kobe White and Zach LaVine, two guys who are just atheists in terms of playing defense.
Yeah, I'm definitely higher on the Magic than you. I think Jonathan Isaac is really, really good. I think when he was healthy this season, he looked like a potential future all-star. I think he has a lot of similarities to a guy like Pascal Siakam, who's one of my favorite players in the league. And I think that him and Aaron Gordon, if they're ever able to have like both of those guys out there together, like you mentioned, as like a 4 and a 5 together, I think that could be really, really good. They haven't had a good guard in a very long time, maybe since Rafer Alston in that great run in 2009. But if they can ever find that, I think that they have a lot of good, like, wings and big guys like Kem Birch too. Like, I know they missed on Mo Bamba, but I do think that they have a lot of talent there. They're a team that's made or is going to make the playoffs two straight years now. So they don't really have like a high ceiling still because they don't have like anyone who's got the potential to be like a top 10 or whatever guy in the league. But I think that they have some solid players. And I think that if they were ever to either hit the lottery or somehow attract someone there, I think that they have pieces who could pair well with a superstar.
So how would you rank those three teams? Bulls, Knicks, Magic?
I would say Magic, then Knicks, then Bulls. I would have the Knicks above the Bulls, though.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I guess my case for the Knicks over the Magic essentially boiled down to, I think I'd rather have Mitchell Robinson and R.J. Barrett than any combination of two guys on Orlando going forward. And maybe that's a case of me watching Mitchell Robinson every night and not watching Jonathan Isaac every night. They're about the same age. And I think even though obviously Isaac, at least as of now, is a wing and Mitch is a center, I think their upsides and what they can do are sort of similar, like both overwhelming athleticism, length, both have a chance to be, I think, amongst the five best defenders in the league. I just think Mitch is a little bit more natural in terms of the position he's playing right now, and that can obviously change if Orlando smartens up a little bit and maybe goes to a Rockets-type model. I guess, and I just want to hear if this is compelling to you. My whole case around the Knicks is I think Mitch, and honestly, this would be an argument to put the Magic higher too, because I think Isaac can be this kind of weapon as well, but I think he's just sort of the perfect antidote to if the Rockets win significantly this year and a large portion of the league commits to true small ball. He's one of the few centers who's good enough defensively that he can stay on the floor in that scenario and honestly excel in some ways, and then offensively can really take advantage of it. And I think Isaac has some of those same qualities, but I just think Mitch has the potential to be dominant in that world. And R.J. Barrett simultaneously has shown enough to say, okay, probably not a perennial all-star, but a really, really good player. And I guess you could sort of say that about Aaron Gordon, but I don't know if there's anyone else on the Magic team who's quite on that trajectory.
Yeah, I think that the point you made about Robinson being more of a natural player at that position, I think that makes sense. I think Isaac's just way more versatile. Like, he can step out and kind of handle on the perimeter. In terms of small ball, I think that what the Rockets are doing is going to work to a certain degree, but I think that they just don't have the most talented version of it. And I think other teams, like we saw in last night's game against the Clippers, can do the same things, but just better. And I think as long as there are guys in the league like Kevin Durant, like Giannis, who are super long and super skilled, I don't think that you can kind of beat those guys playing their own game. So I don't think that the league's ever going to fully go that way until those guys kind of disappear, which I don't really see happening.
All right, we'll group the next three together, too, because I think there's a clear delineation between 21 and 22. So I had the Washington Wizards at 24, the Minnesota Timberwolves at 23, the San Antonio Spurs at 22. I'll just throw it to you, Marcus. How does that look to you?
I'm not very high on the Spurs. That's what jumps out to me the most.
Jesus.
I think the Wizards obviously, Bradley Beal's great. Bertans has been great. No one really knows what to make of John Wall once he comes back. But if he comes back and is like even like a solid player, they should be like a playoff team or like competing for the playoffs in the East. The Spurs, I don't really see them competing very much going forward. We just had Jeff Garcia, host of Locked On Spurs, on Locked On Nets on a podcast that came out this morning, actually. But yeah, there's just not a lot of like young talent there. I think the young guys that they do have either not taken a step forward or have like actually taken steps back in some cases. And I just, yeah, similar to what we were saying about teams before, they don't really have like that one guy who pops.
Yeah, that's fair. I irrationally like DeJounte Murray, Derek White, and especially, like, I kind of think Lonnie Walker is, like, I think Pop is almost suppressing him a little bit. Like, you see that guy's athletic ability. I sort of think he could maybe be that guy, which is ridiculous if you just look at his production, but you watch him play, some of the athletic traits are there for him to be really, really good. And I just sort of think they're playing the wrong version of their team right now, and if they played the right guys the right amount of minutes, you would, I'm, or not you specifically, but people in general would see, like, they have a pretty good base. And again, like, look, if you're going just roster, obviously I'd have the T-Wolves way higher. And I think Jaron Roses should get a chance. The Malik Beasley trade is looking like it's going to be really, really good. I wouldn't have acquired D'Lo if not for the Karl Anthony Towns connection. And presumably that's why they did it. But I just think you can't win with those two at point guard and center. And you can certainly make the argument, if not for D'Lo, the ability is there for Towns to be a good defender if properly motivated. But as of now, they're giving up like 130 points every game. I'd be worried about building around those two. And Beasley isn't a particularly high level defender in his own right. So I acknowledge that I'm probably a little bit too low on them, but I would just almost bank on what we know to be true about San Antonio's organization finding a way to achieve success than Minnesota, even with like the massive head start that is Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah, I think Minnesota has more talent. But the only thing with the Spurs is that I'm assuming Pop is going to retire pretty soon. And so I know that they have like organizational stability beyond just him, but he has kind of been the guy at the forefront of all of it. And so I think there would be real question marks once he does leave, like if that kind of stability can continue. And we've already seen it sort of erode the last couple of years. So I don't think that they're as sure of a bet as they have been in years past to have that kind of like organizational success.
All right. I'm going to rip off the next five because I think I didn't pre-sort this, but to me, this is pretty clearly pretty clearly another tier. It's a group of teams that have a lot of young talent or just talent period, but are either missing that sure thing high-level superstar, or in the case of two of them, are maybe aging out of their talent a little bit. So I have Portland, Sacramento, then Utah, then Atlanta at 18, Phoenix, maybe a little biased here, at 17, and the Indiana Pacers at 16. I'm a little worried, looking back at this, that I'm maybe underrating the current infrastructure that Portland and Utah have for the sort of
and Indiana.
Potential future. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, and Indiana, too.
Yeah, and Indiana. Well, Indiana, okay. I mean, Indiana have the highest. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
You can make the case if you want to ahead of some of those other teams. I guess I'll spoil it. I have the Nets ahead of Indiana, and that was sort of because of Kevin Durant. But, yeah, I don't know. I'll let you go on. I think I might just be projecting forward a little bit too much. But I guess the core argument here is Utah, Atlanta, Phoenix all have a young star, and I think all three of those guys, you can sort of rank them in any way, and I think make an argument for any of those three guys in any way, and I'd kind of be okay with it. But I don't know. Yeah, you know, I'm just going to let you go. I'm rambling.
Yeah, I mean, I think we would both agree that Damian Lillard right now is the best player on any of these teams.
Yeah.
And I think CJ McCollum's in the conversation at least to be the second best guy, like in that Mitchell, Trae Young, Devin Booker class, even though he's older than those guys. I think talent-wise right now he's in that same ballpark.
Sure.
So I think it's interesting that you have them below Sacramento specifically, who De'Aaron Fox showed a lot last year. They've got talented guys like Hield and Bogdanović, but they haven't put it together yet, and I don't really have a ton of faith in them going forward just based on their history. They'll probably, I think, lose one of Hield or Bogdanović in the offseason, so that would lessen that. You know, you can have faith in Marvin Bagley coming back, though. Maybe that's what you're banking on. And in terms of Portland aging out, I think Lillard is definitely getting older, as is McCollum, but they do still have guys out this year like Nurkic and like Zach Collins who could fill in and could fill a lot of gaps. Like, it was just last year that this team was in the conference finals, and I know it was kind of like a very easy series for the Warriors, but even still, to be in the Final Four, like, I think Portland deserves a little bit more respect.
Yeah, maybe in retrospect I'd move them up a spot or two. I guess I just and this is, I mean, this is sort of a philosophical question on what you want out of a team. I guess their championship ceiling, I think in my mind, is sort of tapped out. Like, they tried and they've been trying for years now to maximize the Dame McCollum pairing, and I don't really see the only pivot that I think could potentially lead to greater results is if they could somehow package McCollum and some of their young guys for, and I'm not saying I don't think this trade is on the table, but for someone like a Jaylen Brown who could maybe make a leap and become like one of the 10 best two-way guys in the league, and not that trade specifically, but if they could find someone in that type of mold, that would sort of be the avenue for them getting better. But I kind of think they missed their window. So from like a personal perspective, I would almost rather bank on a young core that could get better with Sacramento. It really was the combination of Fox and Bagley. And Bagley, maybe there are some long-term questions about his health now, but I think people forget, like, he was – there were points last year where as a rookie, he was totally dominant. And, look, I'm not the biggest fan of him. Like, I think it was absurd that – like, at the time that he got taken over Luka. But, yeah, I kind of think he's a future all-star. And I think he's honestly at least what John Collins is in Atlanta. And then did you take – am I wrong? Because I kind of think in retrospect I might be wrong for having Atlanta and Phoenix over Utah, because Utah does still have Donovan Mitchell. Rudy Gobert isn't like old. I think he's like 27. I just, again, with Utah, it's one of those situations like, okay, we've kind of seen what this is, and maybe that's I'm sure Jazz fans would say that's bullshit. We've kind of seen what Atlanta and Phoenix are, and that's they've been bad for 10 years. But I don't know. I kind of like Devin Booker and Trae Young more than Donovan Mitchell, and like their upside's a little bit more than Donovan Mitchell. And I think for Phoenix, Ayton, the fact that he's turned himself into a plus defender in year two is shocking and really, really encouraging for them. And then for Atlanta, I just sort of like the wing infrastructure they're building around Young. The fact that Reddish looks like he's not going to be a bust. I think that Kevin Huerter is pretty good. I don't know why at the moment I can't think of the name of, oh, DeAndre Hunter. He's like a two-way guy, and I sort of like the type of team they're building around Trey. And honestly, out of those three guys, I think Trey is the most talented offensively, and even though he's such a liability defensively in a way that Mitchell absolutely isn't, that might be what matters most. But I'm confusing myself. What do you think of those three?
Yeah, I think the point you made about like we've seen it from Utah is interesting, because it does kind of remind me of like when people talk about LeBron losing like a bunch of finals, it's like, yeah, but he still made it there. Like yeah. Utah, yeah, they flamed out in the playoffs a couple times, but Donovan Mitchell has been in the playoffs already and those other two guys haven't. And he's shown even in losses that he can kind of hang with superstars right now as such a young player in the league. And so I do think that there's still room for them. There's still room for him specifically to improve offensively, and they've shown an ability in Utah to kind of find wing guys that they can plug in. You know, they found Joe Ingles out of nowhere, Royce O'Neal out of nowhere. So I have faith in that organization to kind of maintain relevancy more so than I do Phoenix, who has kind of bungled things time after time. And Atlanta, who has had moments of like real brilliance. Like they had that 60-win team that didn't win anything in the playoffs, but like was really good and was really well built. And so there's definitely, I have a little bit more optimism, I would say, in Atlanta than in Phoenix. But, yeah, I think I would put Utah over both of those teams.
Do you think would you also have Portland ahead of both of them?
I think that's definitely closer. I think maybe slightly, yeah.
All right. I think that's fair. All right. I'll you know what I'll do after this is all said and done? I'll rejigger everything and release the final rankings. All right. You seem to imply in your last comment that maybe I should have had the Pacers over the Nets. And I had delineated. I had cut it off. I said, that's a tier. I don't even think those two are comparable. And my premise was the Nets, I mean, might have a 95% version of one of the 15 greatest players of all time joining their team. And that's basically what it came down to. Obviously, I mean, you can speak to this better than I do, but I still like some of the young talents on their roster. I hope they retain Joe Harris this offseason. Caris LeVert just had a 51-point game, which tends to help. My optimism, and the counter would be, like, is there any scenario where KD and Kyrie together doesn't end in a weird, bad place? But I almost wonder if the talent is just so overwhelming on the offensive side of the floor, and you can certainly make the case the Nets will have to do a better job this offseason of acquiring two-way Robert Covington-style wings as much as those guys are available versus some of the score-first guys they have now, like Dinwiddie and LeVert, to really properly build around those two. But I just think the upside of those two guys together, even with the inevitable weirdness and the idea that Kyrie at any point could just say, screw this, I'm going to become a circus carny and leave the NBA forever. I would rather have that personally than what the Pacers have, which is an amalgamation of really good talent, a great organization, a really good coach, but ultimately, I guess the upside is Oladipo getting back to 100%, but I don't see the ceiling that Nets team has.
Wow, you know, in all the pandemic chaos and every single sport getting canceled, I forgot that Kenny Atkinson got fired this week. Didn't mention that in the intro, but again, this was recorded a week ago, so that's why that is in there. Hope you enjoyed part one. Again, we will come out with part two and three at some point next week. Comments, questions, feel free to tweet them either to me at Gavin Shaw, Marcus at Marcus Barahal, or to Locked On Knicks or Locked On Nets. Also weird that I ended this podcast really complimenting the Nets and arguing their virtues. Imagine that's not going to sit well with a few people. But alas, we're in the end times. That's it for this edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. We will talk to you soon.